What's up and welcome to Champions of Lore, show where each week we talk about the awesome lore behind some of Isle Champions' coolest campaigns and characters. Every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on twitch.tv/cndgames or later on your favorite podcast service. I can't speak this morning. It's a weird morning. B-Dave's not here. Aaron M. Evans also talks about the lore. And sometimes I mess up the intro, but we just go with it because it's a live show, so here we are. If you have any questions, you can put them into chat, and I, Trevor Best, will ask them later in the show when our awesome mods, Martin and Jordan, put them into a little tech stock. But hey, Aaron, who are you for the fine folks who may not know?
Well, I'm also on this show. No. Yeah. I'm Aaron M. Evans. I'm the author of the Brimstone Angels Saga, a six-book series set in the Forgotten Realms, featuring three of your favorite Idol champions, Farida, Havlar, and Mahen. I'm also a content designer for Idol Champions, and the author of the forthcoming Empire of Exile.
Yeah, is it this way? Ah. yeah, B-Dave's not here, but we had a little tech issue, so sorry for the late start. And
we
for podcast,
fought hard to join you.
We did. And for podcast listeners, it's going to be a shorter episode. But hey, we're here, and we're going to talk about some D&D stuff and whatnot, because, we're going to be talking about orcs, because Dob is coming to the game, in 50 minutes. Another Ox Venture person. I don't know. Ox Venturer?
Ox Venturers.
Ox Venturer. There we go. Yes. to join the team and hide all of your gold in a lake somewhere and everything will be fine. Don't worry about it.
He's very funny.
He is. Actually, tomorrow, I'll plug this now. Tomorrow on Idle Insights, you're going to see an interview with me and Luke Westway, who plays Dob. And there's a pre-recorded one. Heads up. It was ridiculously funny. I absolutely loved that interview. There were lots of laughs. And also, there's an extra part of me and them talking about Disney Channel original movies. So.
What's his favorite?
Oh, I don't know if I actually asked him that one.
What's your favorite?
Oh, Don't Look Under the Bed. Yeah, I absolutely love that one. I have this weird extensive knowledge of Disney Channel original movies because I was like, every time they're like, this Friday, I'm like, I will be there. So, yeah, it's a fun time. So definitely tune in for that one tomorrow. But yeah, so we thought we'd do the kind of like all encompassing orcs because Dob is a half orc. But you know, we figured if we just talked about half orcs, it would just be like, well, there's orcs and humans. Ta-da.
Sometimes they make a baby.
Sometimes they make a baby. Where do we want to start with orcs? Because I will be honest, it's weird.
I'm like, let's dive all the way back. Where do they come from in like meta sense, right? Because I think everybody knows that orcs come from Lord of the Rings, but they're actually pulled out of mythology, and they don't look the same in mythology. Mm-mm. Right? So sort of early references, they're kind of like goblins or like spirits. They occupy a lot of the same space as like elves and jotuns and ettins, like where they're sort of creatures of the wild who have been forsaken by God. They come up once in Beowulf as one of the sort of tribes of creatures that are condemned, the alongside elves and ettins that they don't like those in Beowulf. And so it comes out of from actually, here's a fun fact, it does come from the same root as Orcus. Orcus originally being like a name for the devil, and then like as an evil spirit that sort of occupies that same space. So now we have these two unrelated entities in D&D that both come from the same root point.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'll be honest, the first time I heard Orcus, I was like, oh, orc god, okay. And then I was totally wrong.
Like, oh, it's not.
Yeah, it is slightly confusing, but you know. A lot of things in D&D are.
They kind of get framed differently, the sort of the origin creatures, right? Sometimes they sort of feel more like goblins, and sometimes they feel more like jotuns or giants. And then sometimes they're sort of almost like walking dead. None of these being quite orcs, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously Tolkien's a big fan of all of these kinds of sources, and pulls his orcs out of there, where, you know, when his early work, they're sort of framed as like evil creatures, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're really baked into the premises that these are representations of evil in the world of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
And very much like in that setting, right, they are created by Sauron to be the army. They are made by evil for the purpose of evil.
Mm-hmm.
But then we get to D&D, and this is not the mythology of the orcs in D&D, yeah. And particularly in Forgotten Realms, right? Because Trevor discovered where orcs come from.
Well, I do want to preface real quick. I do want to you know, point out the fact that, hey, there's a lot of really problematic stuff when it comes to orcs in almost any depiction whatsoever. There is a lot of terrible racist things and horrible things, and we're getting, and hopefully, you know, editions are going to get better about that. D&D 1 or 1D&D has said that orcs are going to be a prime playable race, so hopefully that is going to get better. But this is all very much rooted in some really problematic stuff. But we're going to talk about some of the lore aspects of it. But it would be a disservice if we didn't mention that and highlight that, because it is totally there. But yeah, so earlier today I looked at the thing for orcs, because I guess I'd never actually done it before, and lo and behold, I did not realize that World of Warcraft and Forgotten Realms shared a very strikingly similar origin to orcs. Like, ridiculously similar.
Yeah, there's a couple of versions of where orcs come from, and there are different sort of subspecies of orcs that have slightly different variants, but the one you're talking about is they came from another world,
yes,
through a portal. There's the idea is that there's this home plane of the orcs, and that a portal is built and the mountain orcs come through. Mm-hmm. and they were brought over by the Forgotten Realms has these creator races, and we've talked about them before, right? We have the Saruk and the Batraki and things like this. And so somebody built this portal and the orcs came through, and I actually don't remember who built the portal.
Yeah, it doesn't I don't think it like specifically said. Oh no, that's society, history, there we go. It was built in the spine of the world. Let's see, during the days of thunder, when Abir Toril was yet united, the first orcs were brought over to the world by the creator races, who built a portal in the spine of the world. So
they're always messing things up,
I guess.
So this happens again later. The Imiskari are kind of an ancient civilization that did a lot of like crazy magic tech. But another thing they did was take slaves. And so they would open portals to other worlds and steal people. So yeah, they're not great. For example, in Forgotten Realms, there is a country called Unther, and a country called, I believe Mulhorand has the same kind of backstory, where Imiskar was just like reached into this world and stole a bunch of Mesopotamians.
What?
And ancient Egyptians.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. So Unther is actually I always call it magical Mesopotamia, but there is this idea that the Imiskari just kind of went swoop and stole a bunch of humans from this world, from ancient Babylon, Sumer, that region. I don't think they ever pinpoint when exactly this went down. At some point, the gods of that realm looked around and went, hold up, where did those people go? Project avatars into this world and lead their people to freedom. So that is why you have characters like Inanna and Enlil and Gilgamesh, who is Gilgim in this world, and even Tiamat in this version of the story, originally comes over from ancient Mesopotamia. So much like the orcs, the gray orcs in this case, the Untherans were stolen from their world because Imiskar was like, yeah, but we don't like to work. They are related, though, because there is something called the Orc Gate Wars. In the Orc Gate Wars...
That sounds like a great MMO.
Right?
Like a, it's like a phone MMO. Oh, jeez. Oh, yeah, there it is. Orc Gate Wars.
Yep. So the gray orcs are pulled through. They're not really suited for the purpose that the Skari wanted them for, because they're like, yeah, we come from a hyper religious society that favors war, and now we're here. We would like to do more war, and so they end up sort of fighting their way into Mulhorand and Unther, and they call down the orc pantheon, and the pantheons fight each other. So you end up with almost all of the Untheric gods being killed in this war by the Orc Pantheon, who are an interesting bunch of characters, to be honest. Like, the one thing, so much like many other made-up people in the Forgotten Realms, this is sausage fest.
Oh, God.
Their gods have, there's one orc goddess.
Is this like the gnome pantheon all over again?
Well, it's better than the gnomes, because there is actually one woman on the pantheon, but there is only one. And that is sort of another thing, that because there is this, you know, there's obviously kind of baked into the idea that these are going to be warriors that we fight and we don't have to worry about killing, even though we haven't actually quite established them as, you know, constructs of evil. We've established them as people ripped from their homeland, mm-hmm. who have a different, you know, cultural background. But okay.
Yeah.
They're always dudes, right? Mm. And you've seen that, we've seen that change in the way that they're presented and the characters that come forward. Let me see if I can find the whole list of the Orc Pantheon, because there are a lot of shades of I like to kill things, which is like, I feel like you're not thinking about
I like
about
to kill things on Mondays, and this god likes to kill things on Tuesdays through Thursdays.
Well, I'm like, I like to kill things with this, and I like to kill things with that. Grumsh is the big one, while I look for everybody else. So Grumsh is, there we go, Grumsh is pantheon. So Grumsh is kind of got overtones of Odin. He's got one eye, the other eye having been torn out purportedly by Corlan Lathalin, the head of the Elven pantheon, because they fought. And that he's sort of the pinnacle of that pantheon. Luthic is depicted as, she's I think called the Cave Mother. And she has these like enormous fingernails that she fights with. And like talons. So the idea is that she's the savage determination of a mother to protect her children.
And
these early decisions about orc culture, she's basically like, all the women stay in the caves and do all the things for a society that aren't murdering things, but also they could murder you. So, okay. But I still like her because if you look at the picture of her, I mean, they're like baskets. They're just nonsense. So she's the one who in the Orc Gate Wars kills Inanna, which like that's a feat, I think, but I might be biased because I like Inanna as a character. And we've got, let's see, so we have Grumsh and we've got Luthic and we've got
Banana Monster in the chat. She's the orc version of Lady Deathstrike. There you go.
So Bagtru is the orc god of pure physical strength and is the patron of average orcs.
The patron of, did you say average orcs?
Average, the patron of, is patron of the average orc. I just said that in a way that was snarky.
So weird.
He's just basically, yeah, okay, so this is the sort of might which overwhelms enemies. It is the inherent strength. Okay. Then we've got Ilnaval, and he is strategic warfare. You're gonna see a pattern here. We've got Shargass, who is the god of acting stealthily in the shadows. He is the god of the night and like death, and basically he's the Rogork's god of stabbing. There is Yurtris, who is the god of death and disease. And yeah, he's gross. He's like maggots and stuff. And just, yeah, generally. And then, you know, we've got Grumsh, who is, which also I have to say, I love this about Grumsh. So Grumsh one eye, right? And, and there is this story of how he lost his eye. And yet you still get this third edition depiction that's on the page where he's a Cyclops. And I feel like someone didn't write their art order very clearly. But alternately, if you're a god and like someone tears your eye out and you're like, fine, oink, I'm going to depict myself this way. I guess actually looking at this, there's several of these that are, he's basically, I don't even know what's happening in the second edition picture.
There's several
of these where he is a Cyclops. So it may be the opposite. It may be that I was introduced to the torn out eye story and he's always been a Cyclops. Because
maybe one eye got pulled out and he's just like, I don't like this asymmetry, and just went,
I this is the thing I would love to know, like, what is the history of the decision that Grumsh has one eye? Like, was it that they were like, yeah, he's got one eye and he's like a Cyclops, or that sounds badass, and then at some point someone said he's got one eye, like Odin, yeah, he must have got his eye ripped out, we should show him with an eye patch. And then everybody was like, what the heck? So someone in the chat is going to tell me what the answer is. I'm pretty sure, because this is how this show goes. But yeah. And Grumsh is the one that people sort of are most interested in talking about.
I do have to say real quick, that second edition art, you were like, I don't know what's going on there. It literally looks like some AI art.
What is going on?
It is some of the most, I put the link in the chat. Most confusing things.
I get it. Okay. It's the thing that's sort of sticking out that looks like it's a dragon's snout. That's his nose, and then his eye is right above it, and he's wearing a weird helmet. And the helmet has teeth on it, which is what's really confusing. And he's got some wild tusks going up. That's what that stuff is.
I guess, yeah.
I clicked on it to blow it up because I was
hurts to look at.
it looks like a dragon being unmade. Like,
yeah,
it is very weird. But you know, it's interesting to me too that there's only third, second, and first, and they are only cyclopic versions of Grumsh. Yeah. I feel like someone editing this page has a preference. I like the other one because I do like that sort of notion. Down low there's a full pantheon picture and Grumsh is just missing his eye, it's all scabbed over.
Okay.
And I think that notion of the sacrifice of your sight for something greater is very resonant. I really wish that there were more to this, because actually this is a thing, if I had the opportunity to write about orcs, I super would, because there's so little. There are some books that go into like what's their home life like. Those are a lot of the Bob Salvatore books that went into The Kingdom of Many Arrows, and that kind of thing, like, that's ends up being missing when a creature is treated just as a monster and an enemy.
Yeah,
it's kind of easy to go, well, we don't care what they do.
Yeah.
I always care because I think it's interesting and it can flesh things out and make them more complex, because nobody does something just because, I guess that's not true. Sometimes people do things because they feel like being a jerk, but a whole society is not like, no, we like being jerks.
Yeah.
Like, there's more to it. So I hope that we get more of that.
Lower on the page, there is a super 80s illustration of Corlon, like, slicing the eye, and it is badass. It's like super cool. Like, that could be a metal album cover. Really cool.
I'm gonna be honest, I've never witnessed someone get their eye knocked out, so I don't know about the validity of this, but it does look like he hit it like a wiffle ball. Like, he just swing, the eye is flying. I don't know how it popped out of his head. But it's got, it's not like he stabbed him in the eye and just like churned
that. Yeah, no,
that
just got
off.
A good he, like, swipe in there. Yeah.
Pull out of his skull.
Oh boy. Oh man, yeah, there is a lot of lore there for Grumsh though. That's pretty cool. But yeah, no, I totally agree with you about the like the home life and stuff of it, and that's one reason like I really like the fact that like, you know, not half orc but full orc is going to be like a mainstay in the player's handbook for one D&D, and because I think that sort of stuff is super interesting to explore and see. It's just like, hey, you know, like we're not a stat block. I do like now that they say typically. Like for the alignments and whatnot, but still, like, it's really weird that at any time we were just like, the whole race is just evil. It's like, let's not do that. One of the other things though that you and I talked about before this, we were both kind of surprised when there was just a thing that was just like, D&D orcs have always been gray, and we were like, wait, what? I know they're gray now,
true.
But I distinctly remember like green orc artwork of like older editions, but maybe that's like a retcon thing that has happened.
And sometimes they're like greenish gray, so maybe it's just where do you draw the line? But I also want
to maybe
point
it's
out,
the artist going like, I'm gonna get as much in here as I can.
on the page for orcs, they have a couple of images for each edition, and the second edition definitely has some inarguable green going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's also showing that, like, you know, there's been a shift in how they've been depicted. But before I get to that, I do want to also point out, we mentioned one of the orcish subraces is gray orcs, and I'm just going to say, if they're all gray, why would you say that one's gray? It's like saying, like I said before, these are the two-armed humans, the weirdo two-armed humans. Like, we all mostly have two arms. Some of us have less, but like, it's a weird determining factor if you're like, no, all orcs are gray.
Sorry, so somebody in the chat put the one Warcraft line that will make me laugh every time, which is, it's not easy being green.
I think that has more to do with the orcs have always been gray, what are you talking about, than anything else.
Yeah.
But,
So
if you look back at how they were depicted in first edition, they look kind of like the... Moblins from Breath of the Wild. Moblins, I think.
Yeah, moblins.
Ones?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mix up which one's a moblin.
Well, and well, that is actually because if I remember correctly, that the moblins were like based off of like, you know, depictions of orcs at the time, and they were just like, well, we're just gonna take these and goblins just kind of.
They're very. I mean, that's the thing, is that you can tell that this was sort of the perception at the time, was that these monsters are like very pig-like, and you can probably pull back to like other pieces of, like, you know, even like Sleeping Beauty, the creatures, the goblins are all kind of piggish, and the I might be remembering wrong, but I feel like there was a lot of that in the Black Cauldron too.
Yes.
And so like these are coming from somewhere, and it may be like that. I'm also forgetting, I know I have watched the the Hobbit, the animated Hobbit.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't remember the production company. Yeah,
it's not Rankin Bass, is it?
I don't think so. Someone in the chat's gonna tell us.
That's why we love you guys. But anyway, I wonder if it you know, something in there somewhere this came in and stuck.
Yeah.
Definitely
the depiction of elves in that animated movie did not stick with anyone anywhere, but I think they look cool.
The second edition orcs example is a little more goblinish, but they are very like kind of small and curled.
They're very hunched.
Yeah.
Very, very hunched. Yeah.
Third is looking more like the depiction for this that they chose for third is looking more like it, but we've lost like the pig snout, and it's kind of more Voldemort, he is a very
hairy boy. Yeah.
And this is the kind of thing I wish when they did things where this art is clearly meant to be the prototype, the holotype for the race or the class or whatever, and you're like, here's what this is. And this is what I said when we looked at the plasmoids. Please put something in for scale, because this orc looks very small.
He looks very tiny.
He looks like a very wee orc.
Like,
but
He looks like he's going to a GWAR concert. Like, he looks like he's just ready for like a fun weekend.
Yeah, let's do it.
Also, you were right. It was Rankin and Bass.
Oh, okay. I like being right. I feel like once we get into the fourth and fifth edition pictures, they're fairly similar. We have locked on to Gray Orc, although I definitely know of fourth edition art where I'm like, that looks green to me. Although I am thinking of a half orc picture, actually. So that might be part of it. There is the fourth edition half orc pictures I really like. That is the male half orc is very handsome. And I think that was a good
for fourth edition?
The fourth edition half orc, yeah. I have a character in the Godcatcher who's a half orc who has like some simmering chemistry with the main character, and I absolutely pictured him, Baron, as the fourth edition.
Oh yeah, okay, no, I see right? that. Right? They do look kind of green, like it is a gray green. Yeah, interesting.
And I think that might be where there's a little bit like, they're not never green? They are sometimes green.
I mean,
but only if you define green a certain way.
I even brought up like the fifth edition paladin half orc. It looks a little green.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
What we're trying to say is we're starting a conspiracy. We're starting another one. Daggalt Neverember is a treant, and half-orcs are green.
Orcs have always been green.
Yeah. So yeah, there's different. They do have like different types of orcs and whatnot, but that doesn't really ever get really played with any kind of like mechanics or anything like that. Like, how in the player's handbook is just like, oh, are you a hill dwarf or a mountain dwarf? They don't really, I don't think they really ever do that with player characters.
I don't think they do in this edition. It has been in other editions and largely as monsters. I think like Orogs, for example, are orcs from the Underdark. And so, you know, they get, let me see what this is. They look a little different. They definitely have dark vision, although I don't remember if regular orcs have dark vision. People have dark vision sometimes. I'm like, what?
Okay. Yeah. Every time I remember Dragonborn don't have dark vision, I'm very confused.
Well, it feels like they should. And also, I'm like, tieflings do because it's very dark. Like infernal blood is, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. Anyway. We'll just move along from that. So yeah. So apparently Orogs are very good at making cool weapons too.
Okay.
And they've been around since second edition.
The
other ones were because I've forgotten them.
I was gonna say, if you want, we could switch over to chat questions and see what they've been up to. Let's see. Let's start off with Evil Turnip. Actually, I will remind you, if you have any questions right now, you can put them into chat with question colon and then your question. And then our awesome mods, I always tried to say Mars afterwards, and I don't know why. Our awesome mods, Martin and Jordan, we'll grab them, put in our tech stock. So Evil Turnip T. This one is inspired by orcs getting their addition to the new player options doc. Well, I mean, it definitely didn't hurt, but yeah, Dob wasn't the main thing for it. If you haven't checked out the one D&D stuff, especially the I think it's like an hour long video with Todd and Jeremy Crawford talking about the stuff. It's super cool. It's really, really neat. I'm very excited. Lurking Rider says, silly question.
Love it. Those.
There's a wand of Orcus, parentheses, well, it's Bailoff's now. There should be a wand of Orcus.
Just unites all the orcs.
Is there a wand of orcs?
Oh, I heard Orcus.
Well, no. The second one was Orcus, like the whale.
I remember. Yeah. No, not that I know of, although I'm sure more than one table has crafted a duplicate of the wand of Orcus that just summons like 1d100 orcs or something.
just a cleaned 1d100 orcs. Let's see, this is from Audius. I'm gonna go with Audius, sorry if I messed that up. Question: how do you feel about orcs becoming a base race in D&D 1? I think it's freaking cool.
I like it especially. So one thing I am curious about is that thus far there has not been a lot of emphasis on the role of culture, which I think is an opportunity missed because culture is not genetic, and so you can live in a culture that is maybe like Farida and Havilar are culturally dragonborn, because they grew up with dragonborn like values and lessons and stuff, and they don't have scales, but that's okay. And you can, be someone who came from something and changed your mind about stuff. That's okay too. And I just really would like to know more about orc culture. And so I feel like the more opportunity you have to treat them as whole, complete people, the more that becomes appealing. The what is it that monster does? I don't know that people care as much. Sometimes they do. They did have all those ecology articles, so somebody cared. But a lot of those are also like, where does it lay its eggs? Not what does it think about the concept of personal property? So that is, I think, like that is my like little like I love this idea because it gets me this thing. Because I just, yeah, I think there's so much about them that doesn't lend themselves well to knots. They're irredeemably evil, and that's that. I think they've suffered from the fact that they don't have the kind of elven charisma PR like drow do.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, I think it's gonna be I think it's gonna be really cool just because one, we're gonna get more like full on orc player characters, because we don't really have a lot of those. Because it is always like half orc and whatnot. And I think it's really cool that they're gonna be doing rules for how to do those sort of parentage, like where it's just like, oh, your dad was a human and your mom was a dwarf. Here's how you make that character. I have a I have a player in my home group who has this family story going. He's been playing different brothers from this family, but the idea was that his dad was human and his mom was an orc, and so or a half orc, and so like he's had oh no, his dad's a halfling. That's right. So he's had one character who's a halfling who's from the dad's previous marriage, and then he's played a half orc who is his mom's from a previous marriage, and then he played a half orc halfling that was their new kid. I absolutely love the family dynamic there, but I love that we're gonna get rules for that now because I think that's so cool. Okay, let's see. This one's from J McUnyielding. Question off topic. Aaron, I've been wondering about Cambions lately. Are they literally just half devils? And if not, how are they created and what makes them different from tieflings or tieflings? Ugh.
So this is a thing that I will say there is differences in different editions. So in the current edition, Cambion is a half devil. And basically a tiefling is someone who is less devil than a Cambion. That essentially you go like mom's a devil, dad's a human, you get a Cambion. Dad's a Cambion, mom's a human, you get a tiefling. That basically it's like a dilution stage of the infernal blood. With the and I guess that's still in place because I think Cambions have always, I don't know, actually Cambions may have been also demons in previous editions, but I do know there was a thing for a while where hang on, I looked at something and I ended up on the wrong wiki. I was on the Eberron wiki.
Oh, geez. We
Yeah,
we're
so
jumping planes.
right, so half fiend, so it's so a basically, but here's the also the thing is that there have been times where this has gotten weirder. So in some cases a Cambion is has to be a plain touched woman, like a tiefling. So somebody who has some kind of like genetic material from a place that is not here, and a Tanari, which is a demon. And there's also like noble Cambions, which means your father is a demon lord, and then your mother is a half fiend. And this is complicated. And then there's also if your dad is a human and your mom is a succubus, then you're an Alu fiend. And this is all extremely complicated.
Little bit.
And so it at the point where I stepped in to write about a Cambion with Brimstone Angels, because Lorkin is a Cambion. Lorkin is not a full devil. It was these are half devils, and go. And I'm fine with that personally. Because I don't feel like, for me, the story would be served by going, it's this, but not this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, your mileage may vary. I think in fifth edition, they just have to be half. Maybe they are still half devils. I don't have my monster. Oh, wait. What am I talking about? D&D Beyond is right here.
Let's just double check. Just a click away. I'm actually going to change that.
Fun fact, I got to reveal this monster entry on my blog when they were rolling stuff out, and it fully crashed my whole site because everybody was so excited to see it.
Oh, my gosh. That's super cool.
It's just a fiend. It doesn't have to be a devil anymore. So you can be half demon and be a cambion.
Interesting. Okay, well, I hope, Jamek, that answered your question there. Let's go to Rex Verde. Question. The orc god of strength is the average orc's god, so he's the Budweiser of orc gods. Oh man, that's really good. Well played. Now all I'm thinking are orcs in a Budweiser commercial and just trucker hats.
Yes.
Lurking Rider question, do orcs have dentists? I mean, probably. I mean, right? it seems like they gotta.
Like, I mean, dentistry is one of the earliest medical fields, right? These people have technology. They also have tusks that protrude out of their mouths and surely get broken. I feel like orcs must have dentistry.
They got it.
So who is the god that the dentists worship? Because that's how polytheism works.
That is true. That really is. It is always, real quick aside, it is always weird for me when we have like a fantasy polytheistic society, and like it's only min-maxed things that they have gods of.
It drives me up the wall. You have found one of my most passionate soapboxes.
Oh no, I've activated her trap card.
It's bananas, because it's like the whole like pulled out thing is like, if you have polytheism, you have a god for everything. Mm-hmm. And some gods handle a lot of things that maybe don't feel related, but are related from the point of view of that culture or its, you know, precedence, right? Then like when you go into a fantasy world, sometimes you get these gods that are like really weird, specific, narrow portfolio, and nobody's taking care of the normal stuff that you actually have day-to-day problems with. And then on top of it, you create this thing where it's not actually polytheism, there's henotheism, which means you have this whole thing, but you pick one god, right? So you live in this world, but you are a priest of Shantaea, or let's say Tempest, because we're going for the fighty gods. You're a priest of Tempest. Are you actually bothering Tempest about everything that's going on with you? Tempest, the one that you pray to when you're like, I just need to figure out how to talk to my kid.
Well, and obviously, I'm a storm at him.
Right? This is not Tempest's job. You should absolutely be taking that to the Church of Shantaea, because that's her job. And it is wild to me that sometimes we get this presentation where it's like, no, you just do one. And then we at the same time are like, oh, and Shar is a greater goddess. Like, nobody worships Shar. She's really terrible. She must be giving something to people who can worship her, like, for an instant. Because otherwise she shouldn't have that power based on the rules you've established. Ah!
Yeah. So real quick, I gotta read two things. One, Carhor put the chat, Frumsh One Tooth, Orcish God of Dentistry. And you know what? I will use my champions of lore powers that be, and that is canon. It's canon. All hail Frumsh One Tooth. I'm sorry, I cannot pronounce it. It's the Obanuman. I don't know how to say it, but I just like it is. They said it is a bit weird that clerics only pray to one god when they are in a setting that is provably not monotheistic.
Right?
It's so weird.
And there's nothing about the setting that actually says the gods are like fighting for supremacy or something. Oh, yeah. Like, it does not help your god if you're only worshiping them. You are just bothering Suni with your problems. She's not the one to go to because you have gout.
This has been one of my favorite conversations that's happened.
She's not going to do anything about that storm. You need to branch out. Honestly, every cleric I've ever written in a book is definitely like going to other churches for other things because they respect their god's time.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Don't bother Agma before a battle. That's not his job.
Seriously. Okay, let's see. Lurking Rider. I'm gonna skip that one. I'm gonna go this just for time reasons. Lurking Rider says, question, the half races have always intrigued me. Is there a canonical choice for the non-orc slash elf half, or has it always been left up to the interpretation of the DMs and players? Do you mean like which parent was what? Yeah, because I don't think it's actually mattered.
So I read that as like, if you're half orc, what's the other half? Could you be half orc, half elf? Could you be half orc, half tiefling? And you absolutely can.
Yeah.
The assumption, and it may have been a rule in previous editions, because sometimes editions got very controlly about how you can do what you can do, is that it's usually humans, because humans are the most numerous in the setting.
And, I heard the most gross explanation for that, which was, it's because the human biology is more adaptable than the others. And I'm like, that's gross.
That is
extremely gross. Do not do that.
I think there are times where I'm like, you know, I stop short on like, how is this gonna function, right? A human and a halfling. I've had a baby. I don't think that's fun if you're the halfling lady. I'm also not sure that someone the size of a child seems like, maybe it's not like that. But anyway, the other thing being like, dragonborn lay eggs. Does this work? But fundamentally, if you want it to work, okay. You're in a world full of magic. Wizard did it.
Lauren literally put in the chat, magic. And heck yeah, exactly. That is exactly what it is.
It's like, and so there is a part where like talking to your DM, because there's this, you know, there are going to be tables where, you know, the magic is going to be like expanded or compressed. Like, how much are we going to use it for things like making half dragonborn, half elf babies?
I don't know. Half dragonborn, half tiefling sounds really freaking cool now that I think about it, though. Like the dragonborn with the horns and everything. That'd be kind of cool.
I'm like, you know, Aarakocra lay eggs too. If, you know, maybe you could have a half dragonborn, half Aarakocra and not have to answer any real questions.
That, I'm going to be honest, that sounds like a Beast Wars fusion toy that I had when I was a kid.
You know, other thing is, sometimes you just don't even need to ask. You don't even answer this question, right? Sure. You're like, hey, I have a half dragonborn, half elf. How did you get born? I don't know. I was a baby.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't take notes.
Well, we're actually running low on time here, so I think that is a good place for us to stop for this week. It is. Aaron, where can people find you? What are some things you're working on?
Oh, gracious. Well, you can find me on Twitter at Aaron M. Evans. You can join me with Trevor and V-Dave. You can listen to me with Trevor and V-Dave on our podcast, Writing About Dragons and Shit. New episode just went out today.
Yes, it did.
Where we talk about dialogue and just all kinds of other stuff. And you can join me on Mondays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific for Concentration Check, co-writing space. You can come join me and we get some work done doing Pomodoro sprints. And I'm just going to wear it out, guys. My new book, Empire of Exiles, comes out November 8th. If you have not pre-ordered yet, please do. If you have, tell someone else to pre-order, maybe. I am working on a really cool pre-order gift incentive thing. Which I will tell the secret of Ivy, who does the really amazing key art, is helping me with this.
And it's gonna be cool. Excited. It's gonna be really cool.
But if you pre-order, you will get that.
Hey.
You can pre-order early and then get it. It's okay.
Yeah, so definitely go do that. Links all around. and I'm just knocking over stuff now, apparently. Yeah, and you can find B-Dave on Twitter at B-Dave Walters, and don't try to keep up with everything that he's doing because it's way too much. And you can follow me on Twitter at the Trevor. There is an A hiding in there, and all of the way too many podcasts that I do. But yeah, that is gonna wrap up this week's episode. Thank you so much to Martin and Jordan for moderating in the chat. Thank you to Lauren for producing. Thank you to Codename Entertainment for just letting us have some fun and talk about some D&D. If you missed any part of the show, you can catch it later as a podcast on your favorite podcast service. And I think today we got a normal schedule. So we got Mars coming up at 1. We got Sketching Hour later in the day. And I think the rest of the week is as per usual. So be sure to catch all of those. But that is going to do it for this week's episode of Champions of the Lore. So until next week, champions out.